So basically, how can one see what city in Australia? Remind me again.
Melbourne.
Melbourne. How easily accessible at this stage is the Brutalist in terms of theatrical or streaming or whatever? What's the situation in Melbourne?
So basically, I saw it. I saw it in the middle of when you saw it. So you saw it.
At the New York Film Festival?
But you saw it. You saw the first half, and then you saw the second half. In between that time, I saw the entirety. It was at a festival, a film festival, the Jewish Australian Jewish Film Festival, which is where the only area that it's currently screening or was screening, and it will be released, I think, mid January here, but only limited.
Theatrically, you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the name of the Jewish Film Festival one more time? It's called the.
I think it's just the Jewish Film Festival, but
That's very
because it's
generic sounding.
Australian,
That
it,
doesn't sound, standoutish enough. It's like
no,
saying
no, no, no.
the Gentile Film Festival. It's like there's a.
Well, we've just got like English Film Festival, German Film Festival, etc., etc.
Okay. All right, so you saw it around roughly the time that I had seen had my second go, which was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I take it that you were, like many people, and I fully cop to this, very impressed by it and very even emotionally moved by it. So, just to summarize your reaction so far.
I wouldn't even necessarily I wouldn't necessarily say that I was emotionally drawn into it. I was impressed by certain aspects of it, and I think certain aspects of it are quite extraordinary. Certain aspects of it are frustrating. I think everyone sort of acknowledges, even if they refuse to say it out loud, that the second half is not as good as the first half. But I'm interested because you didn't watch the second half the first time you tried to see it. Whether or not in your screening of the second half you had a better experience or you were more engaged with it, or what was the story there?
Well, I was minimally intrigued by the increasing testiness, impatience, and outright hostility shown by Guy Pearce's character, who's a wealthy industrialist named Harrison Lee Van Buren. And he's Adrian Brody's Laszlo Toth's main sponsor, and of course he's paying for this massive project. So that conflict, that like you're getting me angrier and angrier. This is costing much more than I anticipated, and I won't have it. And blah blah blah. So anyway, that was at least there was that. And of course, Felicity Jones enters in the second half, and she's I had been led to believe by what people had told me about her character. Her name is Erzsébet. She's the one who's had been married to Laszlo in Romania. Romania, right? Isn't that where they come from? Or is it Hungary?
Hungary.
Hungary. And I was under the impression that she was a piece of work and trouble and testy and argumentative or whatever. But when she arrives, she's not too bad. She's a tolerable person. She's nobody's a day at the beach, but she strikes me as an okay person. I thought it was an interesting handjob sex scene that they had, which is, and he's oddly, oh, no, let's not do this. And then he kind of gives into it. I don't know what his feelings are about her. He doesn't have a competing romantic thing, does he, with somebody else that I've forgotten
No,
about?
not really. That's a good point because I actually felt, in terms of my sort of frustrations with the film, I felt like it was a bunch of other films that I've already seen or plays or anything like that. You've got obviously the Fountainhead really just hovering all over the story. You've got a little bit of Arthur Miller's view from the bridge in terms of that relationship with the niece, and you have Enemies of Love story with the wife from who survived the Holocaust unexpectedly, sort of coming in halfway through the story. I was expecting a as you mentioned, the Felicity Jones character, I was expecting someone really tough and really strong and really smart and really shrewd.
Right.
But what you don't get it with her performance, I don't think. I don't think she has the gravitas to sort of carry it. Originally, Marion Cotillard, was cast, and you just, like, some of my frustrations were like imagining what she would have sort of brought to the role. I just don't think Jones can carry it, and I just don't think that character is sufficiently interesting, even though there are sort of certain interesting kind of connections that she has. You know, the film is about art, how we use art and what arts sort of we use.
Right.
Toth uses, he uses buildings, he creates buildings. Harrison is like money. Money is his art, and how he uses it and how he exploits it, etc. And then you have her coming in, and she's a writer, so she uses, you know, her words as her art. So they're interesting ideas, but I don't think she can carry it, and I don't think the second half explores them particularly interestingly.
You know, it's funny. You know, it just goes to show you that when you are uncomfortable in the milieu of a given film, as I was instantly when I started watching this thing, because I have an animosity, a dislike of Brady Corbett. I've always disliked him. I just don't like his vibe. And I'm talking about, obviously, mainly his performances. And he's always struck me as someone you can't really understand. He seems kind of brutish in his emotions. And I tried to watch Vox Lux, and I couldn't make it again. And I made about a half hour, and I just found it pretentious and confusing and irksome. But the odd thing, and this is curious, that's why I want to watch it again, actually, is that Stacey Martin, who I remember very vividly from Nymphomaniac, the Lars von Trier film, she's cast as Joel Alwyn's twin sister, in other words, she's a daughter of Guy Pearce, right?
Yeah, her name and is there's implications.
I don't even fucking remember her. She was in, I presume, a couple of Hardy scenes, but did she have anything? Did she say anything or do anything? Why am I drawing a blank on her? Do you remember
An implication. There's an implication in some of those earlier scenes that, you know, maybe the Guy Pearce character sexually assaulted in some ways the Joe Alwyn character, and that the Joe Alwyn character maybe sexually assaulted his sister, but it's just sort of kind of implied. But in terms of having a strong kind of presence, I like her on screen, and I think she's actually quite good in the film, but it's all implied. It's just one of these annoying, niggling threads I find the problem with Brady Corbett or Corbet filmmaker.
Are you supposed to pronounce it Corbet?
I've heard Corbet, and I've also heard Corbett.
But I didn't know that. Maybe I've been saying it wrong all this time.
Yeah, I've heard people calling him Corbet. I think Sean Fennessy called him Corbet.
Right.
I'm not sure about that. But the problem that I have with him as a filmmaker is that it's like he has a thesis, and he's imposing this thesis onto drama. But he doesn't know how to necessarily often flesh out these ideas that he has, and he's got a lot of ideas, and I imagine he's got a lot of ideas in his head, but, you know, the act of transferring it onto the screen as a dramatic piece of storytelling can be frustrating, and that second half is just too on the nose, just too many ideas are just imposed on the on the audience, as opposed to creating a collaborative relationship with the audience.
Yeah. So the interesting part is that Sasha, who you know, she sort of felt very alienated from the film in the first half. But she said that at least it gets into something in the second half, and I agree with her. I didn't find it likable, but I found at least it had something going on there. I mean, the intensity, the rage, and that utterly ridiculous rape scene, which I was going to mention.
Yeah, spoilers, unless people are might be upset, but yeah, spoilers. Yeah, it is a totally ridiculous
It
scene.
is a spoiler, but when you see it, it's like, what are they doing? They've got overcoats and suits on. They're kind of wrestling around. You don't really see what's going on. Is some kind of sexual assault? You're not sure because they certainly don't show you anything. It's just this odd kind of, kind of sexual wrestling on some level that nothing is actually happening. I couldn't understand it. Why did he even do it? Why go there if you're not going to clearly indicate, a la, Deliverance or. Or I'm trying to think of another scene of male-on-male sexual assault. But why even do it if you're going to be that vague about it? I just thought it was strange.
I think visually it's vague, but in terms of its sort of meaning, it's he just took something that was sort of figurative and metaphorical in terms of that relationship and that kind of sadomasochistic relationship between the artist and the patron, and he just made it too literal. And that was my sort of frustration with it. To me, that was like a turning point in the film where I was just like, if you don't have the respect for the audience to be able to understand, to know what you're actually exploring and to do it with subtlety, then that's frustrating to me, especially with the last scene where it's just like, bang, I'm just going to tell you what this film is about.
It's near the end, yes. Now, just to, and it also struck me, I thought it would be happening somewhere in Pennsylvania or near where the most of the story takes place. And it takes place in a kind of a cellar room, some sort of anteroom, a storage room, something like that, in the rock quarry where they're both mining, I guess they're after marble. And right? I'm right on that.
I don't think I think it just looks like a set, but I think it's supposed to be, outside of a bar or something like that. It's like that's where it's supposed to be, but it looks like a set. So that's what you're assuming. But no, it's all very sort of in terms of just like not just what it means, but the literal how is this even happening? You're like, how is this even happening? That's the question that you're sort of asking. How is this literally even happening in terms of just sort of logic, plot logic? It's very frustrating sequence, and I can't, to me, it just sort of ruined a lot of the experience going in there. I think that sequence where the train goes off the rails, or there's that huge accident, that's extraordinary. I was like, I'm really excited by this, and I'm really interested in where this is sort of going. And then it sort of goes, to just a director just sort of vomiting his ideas, and that's frustrating.
So let's just, I'll start with a first general impression that I had even before I saw it, which is that Brittany Corbet announces via the that the film is very ambitious because it's, and he sort of proclaims almost in bold letters on a marquee that this is an important film, and he does so by way of A, the length of it, 3.5, I believe, is the running time, something very close to that. He announces it by 250 minutes. That's actually 335. And he announces it by way of the length. He announces it with an interesting idea, which I loved at first, which is the overture. I love the idea of a musical overture preceding a film. I've seen a lot of big ticket films from the old days that began with overtures. I always loved that idea. But it's very short. And then it's over before you know it, before you can get used to the idea that you're hearing an interesting overture. Thirdly, he announces the importance of the film by having shot in VistaVision, a side by large format, side to side format that has not been used a lot. Nolan has used it. It's obviously the heyday of VistaVision was back in the 50s, which is when this film is primarily taking place. And the second, or I mean, excuse me, the fourth or the last thing is the basically the metaphorical vision about a conflict between an underdog, a someone who's ingenious and creative and European in his thinking versus American brutality, efficiency, arrogance, and all that. So that makes it a big statement and a big film. So people naturally want to respect Corbett for having one made something that pretentiously, or at least in form and other ways, is announcing itself as a major statement that you really are required to sit up, put your popcorn away, and really pay attention to. And I understand what he's saying, what he's doing, but it's not something that, when you add it all up, I just felt so gloomed out and de-energized when I was watching it. I so disliked the. I was saying this myself when I was reading a piece about Brody's performance in an interview that he did, and I was thinking back to how affected and such affinity and empathy that I felt for his character in The Pianist. Same guy, having a just as brutal a time, more so, of course, in The Pianist. And I really felt for him, and I thought it was so great when he won the Best Actor Oscar. And I had felt so sorry for him because he was going to have a major role in the Terry Malick film, The Thin Blue Line, The Thin Red Line, and
So
he.
you're not a Adrian Brody hater
No, I'm
going in.
not. I mean, I know that he knows and has acted with Wes Anderson, who I regard as at least a good acquaintance. And I think he's a good egg, and he's been in so many shitty films. And you can't call or make a you can't orchestrate your own career. You have to kind of take what's given to you. And he said in so many words that he lucked out with this. This is the first really good film he's been in since The Pianist, and good for him. I certainly don't want to rain on his parade, but it's inescapable. I did not like his company. I didn't care for him. I don't like.
So that was one of the reasons, at least from reading your review of the first half, that you kind of just you had enough and you didn't want to deal with the second half. Having seen the second half, did your response change?
Somewhat, yes, but it's only because the aggression and the bad behavior on Guy Pearce's part was more pronounced, more belligerent, more aggressive. But I still felt that there was something lacking in the conflict, the dramatic conflict between them. It was more pronounced, but at the same time, I did not feel arrested or involved in it. I just kept waiting for it to kind of, come to an end. I knew how long it was going to be in it, but I was never fully engaged. And it's just the whole vibe of the thing. You just, it's funny. Sometimes, I mean, I can remember being at a bar once in when I was 20 years old or something, and or 19 maybe. And I was sitting there with standing, came into the bar with some friends. This was in the New York State Line. We used to go over because you could drink there. Because New York is drinking age is 18 and Connecticut is 21. And I got into the room and I looked around and I immediately saw a guy at the bar who just fucking didn't like me. He was looking at me in a way, saying, "What the fuck you? Who the fuck is this guy?" He didn't know me. There's no way to, I just got there. My presence in that room was seconds old, and he just despised me. I could just tell it. That, or he was pissed off at himself and he wanted to get into a fight or something, but I was just ugly, really ugly. I was that guy at the bar when I sat in and I watched the movie. And I just
Did
felt very hard.
you just feel like this is an actory part where you just see the acting a mile away?
Well, I certainly did. I mean, I really did feel quite, like it was a huge mistake to have Adrian gush, cry so effusively when he had been when he was told by his cousin, the furniture store owner, who's what's his name, Alessandro Nivola. He's a good actor, but he's overacting. He's always hugging him and everything. I just was wondering where is this going to go, And then as Alessandro Nivola out of the blue, almost. And I didn't notice that there was a great amount of effort on Adrian Brody's part to come on to Alessandro Nivola's wife, but that's what he gets angry at. You're making a play for my wife in front of me. That's it. We're not going to be friends anymore. I'm not going to be your cousin. Fuck you. Do you remember a scene where Adrian Brody is actively trying to seduce her or put some moves on her or let her know that he's interested?
No, I think that's partially. I think is she Catholic, or she's certainly Christian, but it's this sense of kind of her frustration or anger or sort of bigotry towards this Jewish man who is not tried to Americanize himself. So there are those kind of lingering feelings. But the primary reason for that sort of conflict is because the story needs it. The story needs him to sort of move on, and then he sort of moves on. It has that feeling, that structure of just, now we're done with this character now, we're just moving on to the next section. And it's part of the reason why it's so frustrating.
One thing that you mentioned, The Fountainhead, which I thought was that's a really tough film to get through now. I recognize that see, King Vidor was the director, but poor Patricia Neal, who I one of my all-time favorite actresses. She has such
She's
perfect
great.
dialogue. She's good at it, but it's like it doesn't feel genuine. It feels like she's really saying lines that are uncomfortable for her to say. And but everybody remembers that film for its quite pointed and intense sexuality between her and Gary Cooper. If that had been some happening in this film, there would be something to hold on to at least. But I didn't really feel much of that.
No, there's no real sort of connection on those levels, and just that sort of sex scene between Adrian Brody and Felicity Jones. It just feels like if a director or a writer wants to be provocative, he'll just throw in
A hand job
a
like
hand
that.
job set. Yeah, like The Master, like Breaking Bad as well. It for some reason it has this imprimatur of being very sophisticated. It's very strange. But
And what was the thing,
one
by
thing
the
that I
way,
want.
Adrian Brody's character, this is pretty early. This is before he even meets Guy Pearce, I think. Or it's just after. But it's very early, and he goes to a whorehouse, to a house of prostitution, and there's this very clear indication there's this young woman is about to give him a blowjob, and he's talking to her, and we see her down near his belt, and I was wondering, why are we seeing this? Why is this being shown to us so early in the film, just to what, to demonstrate that he has a sexual life, that he has hormones? I didn't get any of that. Did you
It's
understand why that was happening or why?
definitely prior to sort of meeting Guy Pearce. It's in New York, so he's with a friend or maybe another cousin or something like that in New York, and then like he's sent off to Philadelphia. I think the meaning is that he can't connect without his other half. He needs his other half in order to be sort of a whole man, but it's all
His
very
other half being
heavy-handed as
Felicity
well.
Jones, you mean?
It's all
Well,
very heavy-handed.
incidentally, somebody had mentioned, and actually it was Brady who mentioned that he liked the idea of VistaVision because it was like a very dominant format in the 50s. But the film really starts in 47, and I don't know exactly how much time passes, but when does it end? Like 3 or 4 years later? When does he finally have the
It's been a while since I saw it. It's difficult to say. It's all very because you have a lot of time jumps. You've got the time jump after Nivola sort of kicks Brody out. You've got a time jump after the intermission. I think you've got another time jump when for the first time the project is cancelled or suspended, so that you've got several different time jumps, and then you've got the time jump at the end. Truthfully, I have no idea sort of when sort of anything happens, because there's a whole bunch of time jumps deliberately.
Anyway, knowing the culture of the 20th century, not having been around in the late 40s as even a teenager, or the 50s, but I do know that this is a very racially prejudicial society, and that routine friendly fraternization, except in the realm of musicians and true artists, painters, the X factor people. There was easy interplay in the music realm, particularly between dudes of color and white guys. But I didn't believe for a second that how do you pronounce his name? Is Isaac de Bankole, Bankole?
Isaac de Bec sorry, Isaac de Bankole, French actor, yeah.
Interesting actor, but
From
I didn't believe that he would just be hanging with him. Was he supposed to be Adrien Brody's, what, just pal? Was he providing him with the smack that he's using? I didn't get his initial thing. I know that he was hanging around the rock quarry, and he was part of the big construction of the huge building that they're working on. But I didn't understand who or what he really was doing in a constructive way. Did you? Could you help me on that?
So you can only sort of gather what the film implies. So perhaps, and this is sort of being generous, I think the character is just like the friend, and the friend sort of is carried along throughout the entire screenplay, sort of regardless of what situation Brody is in. He's just there because he's the friend. So effectively, I think ultimately, Bankole is actually a builder himself and got him the job initially when he's working at that site,
A
building
builder. You
site.
mean an architect or someone who's
No,
a
no, just
construction
no.
engineer?
I think he's just a. I think he's just a builder. As a result of failing in music. He was formerly a musician, then he sort of turned a builder, and he got Brody a job, and therefore Brody returned the favor when he found success with the Harrison character. Yeah, I don't I didn't find I didn't have any issue with him. I think he's a very interesting actor who's always interesting on screen, so I didn't have any issue with that. But I can understand sort of the frustration because the screenplay—it's a very sort of functional role. Who just
Well,
guy who just
they are
sort of
getting high
is,
together, right? Adrien Brody is shooting heroin. They do get high together, right?
So presumably because of his sort of experiences within sort of the arts world and the music world. He got the drugs, and then sort of he's the first one to get off the drugs as well. So it's a functional role.
Why does Brady show a scene, a nonverbal, as I recall, of the two of them are kind of just lying in bed together, not lying in any kind of intimate way, but they're just hanging out after. What the fuck is that about? That's a stupid scene to throw in. I mean, if they're getting high together, it's just I didn't understand why we were showing them lying down in bed together, which would some dumb people would think, oh, maybe they're sexual. I didn't get that, but I just couldn't understand why he showed that.
No, that's yeah. No, I didn't get that impression either. That theirs was a sexual relationship. It was just, two people sort of getting high, and they have the intimacy of two people who have sort of, debased themselves in some ways. So, and they have that shared experience. But yeah, it's all pretty frustrating. In terms of the Oscar race, you've got Adrien Brody, and there is this impression. I know that Jeff Snyder has sort of been banging this drum, basically that Adrien Brody is like the best performance of the year, and maybe even of the decade. And it is the sort of definitive kind of performance, and this is like the critic's choice, as opposed to Ralph Fiennes or Timothée Chalamet. But
Wait, but where is this
I.
consensus? Where are you getting this consensus? I know a lot of people feel that he's quite good and he should be certainly best actor nominee, but where are you getting this
That's
idea that he's
definitely something that Snyder is saying, but it's he's
really?
definitely,
Jeff Snyder said this in
and
so many words, what, in the last couple of
yeah, pretty
weeks?
much,
What?
yeah. pretty much. He thinks that that Conclave is kind of just mediocre, and Ralph Fiennes is okay in it. And I don't know if you've seen Chalamet, but yeah, it's just a very, yeah, but he has that sort of impression of, this is like a Daniel Day-Lewis style, great performance that is just so much so far above the rest of the field. But I didn't have that sort of impression at all. I like the performance more than you do, but I think Fiennes very, very subtle and very interesting and very compelling
Yeah,
in
for sure.
Conclave. I think it's a terrific performance. I haven't seen A Complete Unknown, but he's really subtle. He's subtle in a way that Brody isn't.
I really love their two brief